In Teju Cole's new novel, Every Day is for the Thief, a man returns to Lagos to visit friends and family 15 years after he'd left Nigeria to move to New York. He finds the city has changed drastically from the place he once called home, and he realizes that he has also changed a lot during his time away. He wanders the city witnessing everyday acts of bribery, corruption, violence, and chaos, looking for signs of hope. It's published by Random House. I'm very pleased to welcome Teju Cole back to our show. Hello.
Thanks very much, Leonard. Nice to be here.
And this novel shares the theme of wandering and observing with the previous one, or we can get into whether it is really the previous one, called Open City. What is it about walking and watching that inspires you to tell stories?
I mean, I think I may be risking becoming typecast as the wandering around and seeing stuff
the
guy.
The peripatetic writer.
Yes. But it's such productive material. The possibilities are very rich, so it's been good to explore that in a couple of books.
Well, I'm sure most readers wonder whether the narrator's wanderings and observations and reflections are similar to your own, or are they the character you've created?
Well, they are the character I've created, but at the same time, they're similar to mine. What interests me is having things that are invented and things that are observed and things that are overheard. All of them melding together in a way that makes it difficult for the reader to tell where real life is and where invention is.
So this is a kind of blurring of fiction and nonfiction, almost memoir and fiction.
You could say that,
or personal essay and fiction.
So many different things going on in there. But what I always like to say is that this is true of every work of fiction, except the most sort of extreme and imaginative science fiction. Everything grows from life.
Your narrator notices what he calls the barely concealed panic that taints so many of the interactions in Lagos. Can you describe where that panic comes from and the ways it's revealed?
Oh, I wish I knew, we happen to be at a particular moment now, but I'm talking about in the last 2 weeks where Nigeria has been very much in the news.
Because of this terrible crime here
as well, this abduction of more than 200 young ladies from a boarding school in Nigeria. But in addition to that, we've had car bombs going off, and the country's in a kind of crisis. It's hard to know. Number one, exactly what's going on. There's an insurgency that's really hard to characterize. But secondly, it's hard to also know why the government inspires so little confidence in the people. It's a very uncharismatic government, and it is quite ineffective.
And the parents of the girls are wondering why the army has no idea where these girls have been taken. We hear all sorts of awful rumors, like they were sold off for something like $12 a piece.
Well, yes, nature abhors a vacuum, and there's something of a vacuum at the heart of the Nigerian state right now.
Well, do you think that government corruption trickles down and actually leads its citizens to act differently than they might otherwise?
I think this might be the one case in the history of economics where we genuinely have a trickle-down situation. Which is that when people have been oppressed for so long, and the people who have led the country, the president and on down, have habitually stolen from the country's resources, at some point, everybody in the food chain, so to speak, realizes that corruption is the way to get ahead.
Well, should we blame oil for that? Because so much of the government corruption seems to be linked to oil, or is it just the legacy of colonialism, the fact that there was a civil war very early, a couple of coups in Nigeria very early in its history?
And this is where a good student says all of the above. it's immensely complicated, and it is a perfect storm of bad luck and foolishness that has brought us to this unpleasant pass.
Your narrator notices all sorts of dramas playing out all over the place. Young men in the internet cafe writing scam emails that are asking for money. The menacing gang members. He sees two people fighting after a traffic accident. Could you read a little bit from that section for us?
I would be happy to. One morning, walking outside the estate to where the Isheri Road joins the Lagos-Sagamu Expressway Bridge, I witness a collision between two cars. Immediately, both drivers shut off their engines, jump out of their vehicles, and start beating each other up. They fight fiercely, but without malice, as if this is an ancient ritual they both have to undergo, less for the right of way than to prove their manliness. When someone from the gathering crowd eventually pulls them apart, I see that one of the men is bleeding at the mouth. "Well, this is wonderful," I think. "Life hangs out here. The pungent details are all around me. It is a paradise for the lover of gossip." Just 1 week later, I see another fight at the very same bend in the road. All the touts in the vicinity join in this one. It is pandemonium, but a completely normal kind, and it fizzles out after about 10 minutes. End of brawl. Everyone goes back to his normal business. It is an appalling way to conduct a society, yes, but I suddenly feel a vague pity for all those writers who have to ply their trade from sleepy American suburbs, writing divorce scenes symbolized by the very slow washing of dishes. Had John Updike been African, he would have won the Nobel Prize 20 years ago. I feel sure that his material hobbled him. Shillington, Pennsylvania, simply did not measure up to his extravagant gifts. And sadder yet are those who haven't even a fraction of Updike's talent and yet must hoe the same arid patch for stories.
On the other hand, your narrator worries about the absence of art and writing and people telling stories of the country. Why is it so important for him to find signs of creative life in music, art, and writing? And this is a country with a rich cultural history in the arts and even modern writing. We have Wole Soyinka, we have Chimamanda Adichie.
Why does he worry about this? Absolutely it is. I'll say one quick thing about that passage I just read, which is that this is one of the places where it's clearest that I'm the author and this is the narrator sort of griping about, you know, how boring, you know, American fiction or whatever. Except that right after this, I wrote a book in which nothing happens and most of it is set in the United States. So
yeah, this book was, we should clarify.
Yes.
This book was written first. It was published in Nigeria before.
That's
it was
right.
Published, well, obviously before it's published here. They didn't publish, did they feel that this was just too Nigerian to publish first?
I'm not exactly sure what the rationale was. It just seemed to make sense. I mean, I wrote them very closely to each other and it seemed to make sense to lead with Open City here and to lead with Every Day's for the Thief in Nigeria.
Well,
but I want to answer your other question about culture in Nigeria. This is a story of return, about somebody who goes back and wants to insist on a kind of normalcy. It's a contemporaneous city, and he says, we should have artists and writers and music and safety and all of those things. And so he goes around looking for those things. And he finds them in a few places, and in fact, they are part of what redeemed the place for him.
My guest is Teju Cole, whose latest published novel in this country is Every Day is for the Thief, published by Random House. The title?
Every Day is for the Thief. It's from a Yoruba saying or Yoruba proverb, Ojo gbogbo ntole, ojo kan ni toni nkan, which means every day is for the thief, but one day is for the owner of the house. And I like it in Yoruba, which I speak fluently, was my first language. And I like it in English because it has this sort of nice iambic beat to it. Every day is for the thief. And it embeds a story inside it about justice, the hope of eventual things coming to rights.
Your narrator has returned to Lagos after having been away a while, and obviously he has been affected by his time in New York. But has Lagos changed all that much, or is he just noticing things he might not have noticed if he hadn't left?
I think part of what he's dealing with in this story is what I sometimes call Nigeria's drift. On a micro level, I mean, two cars bump into each other and the drivers start fighting.
But the police stop people and demand money.
Yes.
And that's the norm, it seems.
So there's this weird norm where you don't get a sense of society improving itself rapidly enough. So it's not that things have... It's not simply that things have not changed enough. It's that things have remained too static, and that's where his frustration lies.
Well, how do people see him? Do they see him as a Nigerian or as somebody who's returned home, or has he become an American at this point?
Well, one of the things he mentions in the book is the fact that he's of a mixed race, and so there's this sort of this distancing. But he grew up in Nigeria and he was used to it. But the fact that he's been living overseas and he has mixed parentage, his mother is from Europe, is something that allows people to further say, well, you don't really understand how things are here anymore. And I wanted to give a bit of that distance.
Well, how does one deal with all the scams, the cheats, the demands for bribes, the people, the thugs who demand payments?
No, I'll tell you how. You get worked up. You don't give in. And then eventually you give in and you find that it's easier. And your ethics become situational. That's what happens to people in these situations.
You give in because you have no other option.
You give in because you get exhausted.
Can you talk about the photographs in this book?
Yes, sure. Photography has been one of my great joys in the past decade. And I wanted to have photos in this book as a kind of parallel fiction. Now, how can photos, which ostensibly are not manipulated, they're from real life, how can they be fictional? And for me, the fiction in a photo is from placement, it is from decontextualization, and then from sequencing. So that if you look at all the photos in this book, maybe there are 18 or so of them, they tell a story in parallel to the story being told by the text. They create a similar psychological space.
What was the reaction to this book when it was published in Nigeria?
Right. Well, I mean, I see from your tone, because you can tell it's kind of a...
Well, this is a very critical book.
It's a tough assessment of how things are in Nigeria, how they were in 2006 when the book was written. The reaction was very positive. Nigerians loved it. You know what? They thought it was really funny. And that was a good lesson to me, which is that if you describe the absurd in a straightforward way, people who are in that absurd situation have a sense of relief about it. Ah, finally, somebody's talking about what we're going through here.
So Nigerians love it.
Yeah, I mean, I hardly remember any critical, any negative response.
So maybe now you should write a book about same-sex marriage and find out what Nigerians think about that, because the government just passed a law on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, why not? The writer's role is to testify to our current predicament and to provoke a little bit and to help us move the pieces on the board. So there's a law that's just been passed. It is a terrible law. It is a distraction. And unfortunately, all it does is that it gives permission to foolish people to do violence to their neighbors, it's a terrible law.
Now, you're active on Twitter. You use it to write essays and projects. So that's the short form. I gather you're also writing a nonfiction book about Lagos.
Yes, I'm writing a nonfiction book about Lagos right now, continuing to explore what for me is this endlessly interesting, endlessly frustrating, enormous, complicated space. So that's what I'm going to be working on over the next couple of years. Yeah.
Your narrator makes a visit to the National Museum, and that depresses him.
Yeah.
Because all the great art has been moved out of the country?
It hasn't been moved out of the country. Most of it is there. But it's this gap between the subtlety and wonder of these artworks and the current custodians of that work, who seem to care nothing for presenting it in the right way. And it's that gap between what we could be or what we have been and what we currently are that depresses him, and frankly that depresses me sometimes too.
Tejo Cole will be in conversation with Emma Tavakumar at Community Bookstore on Wednesday, May 7th. That's at 7 p.m.
Today.
Oh, it's today.
No, not May 7th. Today.
Okay. Well, tonight. I'm glad that you corrected that.
Yes, tonight.
You can get, I guess, information on the address anyway on our show page at WNYC.org.
Yep.
Teju Cole's novel, Every Day is for the Thief, is published by Random House. And it's always a pleasure to see you. Thank you for coming back.
Always nice to chat with you, Leonard. Thank you.